All right, if the clerk will announce counsel who will be arguing today.
May it please the court, Mr. Richard Gladys will argue for the appellant, Ms. Laura Tomlins will argue for the state.
All right, Mr. Gladden.
Good morning, may it please the court. The issues before the court on this appeal, I believe, are confined to legal issues, so I won't spend a lot of time with regard to the fact. With the facts in the case, I think they're pretty spelled out. There may be some disputes, but I don't think they're material necessarily on the issues that are presented. What I distill from both our brief and opposing counsel's brief is just a series of basically four, possibly five issues that are before the Court of Appeals. The first one, and I think the most serious disagreement as far as legal issues go, is the question of whether fair market value is an element of all criminal mischief cases. We cited and quoted both the El Omari case as well as the Holtz case at pages 15 through 16 of our brief. The state, both in the trial court and on appeal, has taken the position that the question of fair market value being an element of criminal mischief only applies when property is destroyed, and that it does not apply as an element when property is damaged. I think it's suffice to say that both El Omari as well as Holtz put that issue to rest. The state cites in support of its departure from precedent in those two Court of Criminal Appeals cases a case out of San Antonio called Milo versus State. What the state overlooks is the fact that Milo was decided 2 years before El Omari, which said that fair market value is an element of not just destruction of property criminal mischief cases, but damage to property criminal mischief cases. So I think the court it's not necessary for the court to spend a lot of time on that issue because I think it is settled. As a matter of fact, the Wise decision from 1972 in the Second Court of Appeals remains precedent, and the state is asking you to overrule that. I never knew Judge Brewster personally. I heard a lot of stories about him both before and after he was a federal judge, but I never heard anybody say that he didn't know what the law was. And so I would suggest that there's no reason to particularly in light of the fact that Judge Brewster's opinion in Wise has been affirmed and adopted by the Court of Criminal Appeals in El Omari and Holtz. I don't think it's going to be appropriate to reverse it. The next question is once it's established that fair market value was an element of the state's case, whether or not a hypothetically correct jury instruction would include a fair market value instruction. We believe that it does for two reasons. Number one, it would be law applicable to the case because decisional law has established that fair market value in damage cases is an essential element of the state's case in criminal mischief cases. Number two, the decisional law goes beyond that and says that a defendant is entitled to a jury instruction. And so both because a defendant is entitled to such an instruction and because it is law applicable to the case, a hypothetically correct jury charge would include such an instruction.
And it wasn't in this jury charge.
It was not in this jury charge. We are not raising an objection or a complaint on appeal about that omission from the jury instruction. But
you didn't, counsel didn't object.
No, because we think we're entitled to an acquittal, not a new trial with a proper jury instruction.
The trial counsel didn't object to that being included.
I was a trial counsel, and if you read the record, I objected about 25 pages, both at the close of the state's case. I objected to there not being a directed verdict. The issue you have here is a sufficiency or insufficiency of the evidence, so we have to get to what a hypothetically correct jury charge is.
But my question is, did you object to the jury charge as it was read to the jury?
Yes.
Didn't include a fair market value instruction.
As well as the fact that it didn't confine the amount of damages or costs of repair to those that were actually necessary to restore the property to the condition it was in prior to the conduct of the defendant. The third question is kind of the bulk of this appeal is, was there sufficient evidence of fair market value to support the jury's verdict of guilt on a Class B misdemeanor? That would be repairs that the fair market value would be over $50. That's, I think, probably where most of the issue arises on this appeal. We say that there wasn't. The state presented only an invoice. They had some officers say, and I quote actually in the brief, that they had no idea what the fair market value would be. They also testified about how they have this arrangement with the car dealership where they don't seek bids from other repair people, providers, but they just have a contract where they just send the vehicle down there and they basically pay. And then in this case, they didn't show, number one, the invoice, it shows what they were billed for it, but it doesn't show that the repairs were either fair market value in the community or that the repairs were even necessary. And we kind of get into a Wise versus State case, Judge Brewster's opinion, where you've got a basically de minimis. These windows, and I think it's probably in the record, are designed with very little pressure to snap out somewhere around 3/8 of an inch out of the pliable frame without doing any damage. And you can get a rubber hammer, if you even need one, to pop it back into place. The state's position throughout this case, both in front of the jury, closing argument, as well as they convinced the trial court, that just an invoice alone establishes fair market value.
And obviously the jury didn't believe that, but wasn't your expert's testimony sufficient to prove the offense for which the jury actually found him guilty?
No, because his testimony is the window did not need to be replaced. It wasn't cracked. It wasn't broken. There was nothing wrong with the window. And that his customers don't require the car to be in factory condition ordinarily.
Okay, but what his customers require, the police department wanted this put back in perfect condition so that it didn't leak. And wasn't his testimony that to get it there it was $200 and something?
It might or might not be. The problem is that the standard for fair market value is not based upon restoring the vehicle, the window, to factory condition, as the state continues to argue on appeal. It's a question to put it in the condition that it was prior to the conduct of the defendant. There is no testimony from my client or anyone else that would say, number one, more than de minimis damage was done. He testified he doesn't even charge all these other police agencies when they come to him, because it's just a matter of popping it a couple of times with a rubber hammer. I do get into the question that the state makes an argument, and I think there may be some merit into it, that there might be sufficient evidence to show that it was more than de minimis and under $50 worth of damage. We argue that that's not the case, because you don't presume that just because there's damage based upon what the condition of the vehicle was immediately before the conduct, just because there is damage doesn't mean it's more than de minimis. You could have dust on a vehicle that could be defined as damage, but whisking the dust off the window would not provide a basis for a conviction for a criminal offense of causing damage that would be legally recognized under the criminal mischief cases. So I don't agree with you. And the biggest problem is that I see is that basically the issue is not, as you were getting to earlier, we're talking about what the condition of the vehicle was immediately prior to the conduct. We're talking about the fair market value of putting a rubber hammer and tapping on it. We know, I tend to agree with you, the jury wasn't buying the bill for over $1,000 where they basically replaced the entire window that wasn't broken, the frame that wasn't broken, and all this other stuff, with not even a used window or a used frame like they insisted they were entitled to be considered, but rather a brand new factory condition, which basically restored the vehicle to a condition that it was better than it was immediately prior to the defendant's conduct. That's what the Wise decision of this court was all about, is the fair market value has to be measured by what it costs to repair or restore the vehicle to the condition that it was prior to the defendant's conduct. And I submit to you that there was not sufficient evidence to convict on the Class B misdemeanor, that arguably might be if you said a jury did actually conclude that it was more than de minimis and under 50. the problem I get is we get into this question of whether you can reform the judgment to show a Class C misdemeanor in this case. And we're saying, as we say in our brief, that you can't. In cases like the Bowen decision or cases like the, I think it's the Gaddy decision that's now on remand from Denton County that y'all have in your court, you might have a situation where you've got a prior, you've got a felony DWI case. You've got a prior DWI as an enhancement or to establish jurisdiction for the felony status of the DWI. If it turns out the prior, there's no proof of the prior presented or it's somehow defective and can't be used to create the felony DWI, in that situation, a court of appeals could reform the judgment to make it a Class A or a Class B DWI, a misdemeanor DWI, because the jury necessarily would have concluded that all the elements were met for DWI, but for the prior conviction or convictions. In this case, you can't really do that because you can't say that the jury necessarily found that the fair market value was more than de minimis.
If they found it was Class B level, they would have had to have found it was Class C level.
No, not if they didn't know that it had to be based upon the fair market value of the repairs to the condition immediately prior to the conduct. You had the state arguing fair market value is whatever the invoice said. We know the decision law says that is incorrect, and it has been incorrect for 50 years. And I would add, incidentally, that I may again try a criminal mischief case in Judge Bridges' court, and I think it's kind of important enough, at least for Denton County, to go ahead and publish this decision however you decide the case, because I don't think Judge Bridges is going to change his opinion that basically fair market value is whatever a car dealership bills you for it without a single other estimate from anybody, without any testimony from anybody saying that they have expertise or that they know what the fair market value of restoring that vehicle to the prior condition was.
What impact does it have that one of the officers testified that the invoice was paid?
Okay, I think that's a red herring. There are some cases prior to El Omari, prior to Holtz, where it somehow is supposed to make a difference what the fair market value is, that you throw in that it was paid or not paid. I think that's a red herring and has absolutely nothing to do with the measurement of fair market value. If someone's been harmed, they shouldn't be required to go out and buy a new car or whatever. And of course, you've got insurance that might be relevant to some restitution issue, but it certainly doesn't have anything to do with the element of proving the fair market value prior to the defendant's conduct, because that's what is a temporal kind of consideration. What was the fair market value prior to the defendant's conduct? What happens after that? I think is irrelevant, and specifically as to whether the victim or alleged victim did or did not pay an invoice or otherwise. And the Wise versus State case actually addressed that, is that it had been paid, and of course you can get off into whether there's some kind of collusion between, and I think there may even be that issue raised in this case, is you've got a University of North Texas who blindly is paying every invoice without getting an estimate from anyone else other than this car dealership. The car dealership is charging over $1,000 or $1,100, which nobody in the right mind would ever pay for the kind of repairs that were necessary in this case. It was not necessary to go get a brand new, right out of the factory, frame, window, etc. The jury was just left at large to more or less just kind of make an equitable decision about what they thought would be appropriate degree of offense to charge. There is no way of saying that they necessarily found in this case that the fair market value was greater than de minimis. You also have a problem is that even if you were to reform the judgment to show a conviction for the Class C that is more than de minimis and under 50, you would still have to remand the case for a new punishment hearing, because the fact that the jury fines somebody $500, that's one-fourth of the maximum. So then what would you do? Do you make it $125, which is one-fourth of the maximum in a Class C, or exactly what do you, obviously the 14 days jail time is out the window because Class Cs don't include jail time. So I submit to you that there is insufficient evidence to support the Class B because there was no evidence of fair market value other than the invoice. Number two, that you can't reform it to make it a Class C because you can't say that the jury necessarily found beyond a reasonable doubt that the fair market value was more than de minimis, unlike a situation in a felony DWI where you can actually say they met every element of the DWI, they just didn't prove the prior felonies, DWI misdemeanors that would elevate it. That's a different situation than what you have here. So I would move that you enter an acquittal, and for all purposes, thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Gladden. Ms. Tomlin.
May it please the court, counsel. The state's proof of pecuniary loss and necessity of repairs was legally sufficient. The state was not required to prove the fair market value of the cost of repairs. The state challenges that fair market value is an element of criminal mischief. That's not in the penal code, and the penal code actually defines the pecuniary loss that is in the criminal mischief statute and says that the property is only damaged and not destroyed. The pecuniary loss is the cost of repairing or restoring the damaged property within a reasonable time after the damage occurred. The appellant is challenging the denial of the directed verdict, and that's a challenge to legal sufficiency, and that's measured by a hypothetically correct jury charge. The hypothetically correct jury charge has to set out the law and can't unnecessarily raise the burden of proof for the state. In a criminal mischief, absence evidence of destruction, a defendant is not entitled to an instruction on fair market value. And as I said in the criminal mischief statute, that the statute that defines pecuniary loss for the criminal mischief statute, if it is damaged, the pecuniary loss is the cost of repairing or restoring the property within a reasonable time after the damage has occurred. In this case, we have proof of the actual cost of the repairs. In State's Exhibit Number 7, we have the receipt, the paid invoice from Bill Utter Ford for $1,003.79. Therefore, we have the actual cost, and the car was only damaged, and fair market value is not needed.
How do you get around his Elamari and Holtz cases?
Elamari, Holtz, and also Barnes v. State, the appellant cites, and all three of those cases deal with estimates of damages. In those cases, the repairs weren't actually done. There was no receipt of actual repairs. All the evidence was estimates, and in those estimates, they wanted the estimates to be the fair market value. In Milo v. State, as the appellant brought up, a fence was destroyed, and there was evidence of how much the victims paid to restore the fence. And the San Antonio Court of Appeals found that that evidence of what it costs to fix the fence was all that was necessary because it was damaged and not destroyed. So the cost of repairing the fence was all that was needed to prove the pecuniary loss.
So if the bill had come back from Utter Ford for $7,500, that's okay? Here's the bill, we paid it.
I don't think any amount would necessarily stand up to this, but in this case,
if the law is very black and white about what was paid for it, then how do you maneuver around that and say, well, I'm not sure that any amount would be okay?
Well, there has been case law about the reasonableness of the actual cost of repairs, and it's a little bit unsettled. Kincaid v. State and Sepulveda v. State do say that as long as there's cost of repairs, you don't have to find reasonableness. Athey v. State does say that in every case, the repairs have to be necessary and reasonable. And I think in this case, we have Officer Bergstrom and Officer Bohannon testifying that these damages had happened before. They'd paid the same price. There is a bidding process that Bill Utter Ford has won with UNT Police Department in order to get the contract where they get all the work for the cars. and also Lieutenant Bergstrom repairs cars in his spare time, and they did testify that this was the fair market value based on their past experiences with this same damage. Appellant relies on Wise v. State, a 1973 case out of this court, and in that case, the evidence of the cost of repairs was a receipt for painting the entire vehicle when only the paint on the hood of the vehicle was damaged. And in that case, as the appellant argued, it was about the condition before and after because the whole car was painted, they were in a better condition afterwards. A year after that case, the Court of Criminal Appeals in Crawley v. State held that proof of what was actually paid at a dealership for damage to a window of a vehicle was sufficient proof of pecuniary loss, which is much like we have here. And 16 years later after Wise in Kincaid v. State, the Houston Court of Appeals held that Wise was based on an interpretation of a former statute for criminal mischief before 2806 was enacted, and held that the cost of repair was the proper measurement for repairs. And here we have Lieutenant Bergstrom and Lieutenant and Officer Bohannon testifying that the UNT PD repairs its vehicles as soon as possible. The vehicle would leak without the repairs, that because of the damage to this car, the entire window had to be repaired, and UNT paid $1,003.79. So unlike Wise, there's proof of the actual repairs that were necessary because of the defendant's actions. The evidence of the cost of repairs was legally sufficient in this case because we did not have to prove fair market value. We had the invoice, we had the officers testifying. Lieutenant Bergstrom said that they take it to the dealership because the dealership will get it back to factory specifications, and they keep their cars in factory specifications. The evidence of this case is more than an opinion or an estimate of damages. We have the testimony and the actual paid invoice. Appellant's expert.
But it seems like to me that the reasoning in Holtz and Elamari being that the cost of repairs should be conditioned on fair market value would still apply, even though this might not be an estimate. It might be a bill that was actually paid. Seems like the reasoning that someone should only be responsible for the fair market value of the damage that they did would apply. So even though those cases are factually distinguishable because it was an estimate versus a bill actually paid, why does that reasoning not apply?
Well, Your Honor, this court has also held in Janeth last year that when the legal sufficiency of the pecuniary loss was challenged, that the amount paid by receipts of, it was a homeowners association put up a barrier, the defendant destroyed or damaged the barrier, and they brought receipts of what it cost them to repair the barrier. And this court found that those receipts were sufficient to prove pecuniary loss. Even though the state contends that they do not have to prove fair market value, in this case, there was evidence of fair market value through the officer's testimony and through the receipt, State's Exhibit Number 7. Both officers testified that this damage had happened before and they had gotten it, they had had it repaired before, and this past experience and this experience led to the same amount of cost. They both explained that because of the nature of the damage to the window, the entire window had to be replaced. And even on the video that was played in front of the jury, Officer Bohannon said on the video, this entire window is going to have to be replaced. The department also always gets the deputy chief of police to approve all the estimates to make sure that the estimates are a fair price. Additionally, the appellant's expert, John Schell of Smitty's Auto Repair, testified that he disagreed with the cost, but he did testify that the repairs were necessary because the window would leak. He testified that he would not charge a police department, or he would charge a regular person $20 to $40 to mallet hammer the window back into place. He said that if he would replace the window and use junkyard glass or aftermarket glass that didn't say Ford, and that if he were to put Ford glass in, it would cost up to $287, was his estimate, plus $100 per for his labor. Even if the state is arguing that we don't have to prove fair market value and that we did prove fair market value through our witnesses, but even if the court doesn't buy that, the appellant's expert did prove fair market value when he explained what it would cost at his shop. And presumably, since the jury found the defendant guilty of the Class B $50 to $500 misdemeanor, they presumably somewhat believed the state's witnesses and somewhat believed the appellant's expert. The way to get to $50 to $500 with the evidence in front of them was to believe that the window had to be replaced, but believed it might cost what the appellant's expert would have wanted it to cost. The evidence of the necessity of repair was also legally sufficient. All witnesses in the case agreed that the repairs were necessary to restore the vehicle. Lieutenant Bergstrom and Officer Bohannon testified that for this type of damage, the entire window had to be replaced. Lieutenant Bergstrom explained that because of how important these vehicles are to the police officers for their daily jobs, they need to get them back as soon as possible. And in his experience, the best way to do that is through a dealership because they can get parts in quicker and get the cars turned around quicker. Lieutenant Bergstrom and appellant's expert witness agreed that the window needed to be fixed so that it wouldn't leak. The appellant's expert testified that he could get junkyard glass or aftermarket glass, but it wouldn't be a Ford part. And there's a conflict in the testimony as to whether the glass needed to be replaced, but I think that would be a conflict for the jury to resolve, and that a rational jury could have found beyond a reasonable doubt that the necessity of repairs or that the repairs were necessary as a result of the damage done by the appellant.
Was the glass broken?
The glass was not broken.
Why would you need to replace the piece of physical glass if it wasn't broken?
The officers testified that because of the nature of the damage, certain pieces of the window had to be replaced, and to get it back to factory specifications, they had to order the window assembly, which is on State's Exhibit Number 7, as it's called Run ASY, and they said that in order to fix that window, you had to order the whole window assembly and replace it. Appellant in his brief also relies on Lackey v. State from 2009 out of Texarkana to say that fair market value is a crucial element of the offense of criminal mischief. But in a reading of that case, you'll see that it distinguishes the damage to property versus destruction of property, and that a damage of property's pecuniary loss is the cost of repairs versus destruction, where fair market value comes into play. And in the hypothetical jury charge would not include the fair market value, but in this case, the definition of pecuniary loss was in the jury charge as it is laid out in the criminal mischief statute. And even if this court does not find that the evidence is legally sufficient for the Class B $50 to $500 criminal mischief case, the state would urge the same arguments toward a Class C criminal mischief of $0 to $50, based mostly on the appellant's expert's testimony that it would cost $0 to $40 to hammer the window back into place. The appellant argues about de minimis damage on the car, but the window was pushed out. Everyone agrees that this window was damaged and needed to be repaired, so there would be at least evidence for a Class C. Unless the court has any more questions, I'll conclude. The evidence was legally sufficient to show the necessity of repairs and the pecuniary loss, and the state was not required to prove the fair market value of the cost of repairs. The state requested the court affirm the judgment of the lower court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Tomlin. Mr. Gladden.
Thank you. The state's argument, I would address first, concerning the fact that there is a subsequent statute or a subsequent recodification of the criminal mischief statute since the Wise decision of this court, I think is without merit. The reason being that in the Holtz decision, which is a very recent Court of Criminal Appeals decision, the Court of Criminal Appeals cites this court's decision in Wise as being the proper, in a footnote, and I would tell you that that's in the footnote number 52 in Holtz. I make reference to it in my brief at footnote 109. That Wise decision being approved by the Court of Criminal Appeals, I think, overrides any argument that there would be some change in the law by a recodification of the former statute to its current form. With regard to the Janrath decision, I'll confess to saying that I didn't take time to read it this morning. I probably should have read it sooner. However, I do know that it's a unpublished decision. It has no presidential value and certainly would not provide a basis to sub silentio reverse the Wise decision of this court that's longstanding precedent. With regard, getting back to Justice Gabriel's question about didn't my expert provide sufficient testimony to support a Class C or the Class B. And I'll address the Class B question first. We have not only two problems, and they kind of coalesce sometimes. It's number one, what was the fair market value of the cost of repairs to restore the vehicle immediately prior to the defendant's conduct? Implicit in that, or even separate as an additional requirement, is that the repairs be necessary. The state continues to tell you that the measure is what the cost of brand new factory parts are. That's one problem. Number two is my client was asked both ways if it was necessary, and it was a hypothetical question, if this window needed to be replaced, that there was nothing wrong with it, and if it was necessary to go buy a brand new factory window, what would you charge then? That's where he came up with the $254, which is grossly different than what the car dealership charged for unnecessarily putting a new window in that vehicle. The jury was not told that they had to confine the measurement of damages to the fair market value of repairs that were necessary to restore the vehicle to the condition it was in immediately prior to the defendant's conduct. They were provided with an invoice. I think Justice McCoy is on the right track. Under the state's theory, if Bill Utterford charged $7,000 and the University of North Texas just kind of wrote the checks, kind of like they did in this case, we know the jury didn't agree that the University of North Texas acted reasonably or appropriately in cutting a check for over $1,000 for something my client says he doesn't even charge police departments to do, and that is get a rubber mallet and tap it a couple of times. My client doesn't charge anybody anything for that that's in law enforcement and never has. So I think that it would be illogical and I think contrary to decision law to say, because LMR has already decided, because Holtz has already decided it, that you go with the state's reasoning, overrule prior precedent, the Wise decision, and just say whatever somebody's willing to pay somebody to repair their car, the defendant gets stuck with criminal responsibility at that degree of an offense. And I don't think you should allow private parties to manipulate someone's guilt or the degree of offense that they're convicted of, and that's what the state's asking you to do. Again, it's not factory specifications that's being considered. It's a question of what the condition of the vehicle was immediately prior to.
Well, if the testimony was, and I believe her argument was, that the officers testified they kept their vehicle at factory specifications and therefore intended to restore that vehicle to factory specifications. Okay. If that was the testimony, and if your witness testified that to get that car back to factory specifications cost 200 and whatever it was dollars, would
that make a difference?
A rational jury, it sounds like to me, resolved that and said, okay.
Okay, I think if the state said, okay, first of all, I don't think the police department at North Texas can overrule binding precedent in this court as established by the Court of Criminal. If they say we don't care what the fair market value was. If somebody scratches our vehicle, we keep our cars in factory condition, so we repaint the whole car, kind of like in the Wise case. And what you're saying is that my client is criminally responsible for not restoring the cost of restoring the vehicle under fair market value principles to what condition it was prior to his conduct, but that because of his conduct, the measure is actually to restore it back to factory condition.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
Okay, all right. Well, in the testimony, the difference was if you got a little Ford brand new 2012 logo there at the bottom of the window, that they were entitled to restore it to 2012, even though it was a five-year-old car, because they just like to have the latest, newest windows whenever they're going to repair them, even if the repairs aren't necessary. I'm not sure I understand your question, but it seems like to me that if the University of North Texas says, we don't want it just to be in the condition it was in prior to the defendant's conduct, we want a brand new window direct from Detroit with a little logo that says Ford Motor Company 2012, that would bear no relation to the measure of what the cost of repairing it or restoring it to the condition prior to the defendant's conduct. Those are two different standards.
Let me ask you if I understand what you're really saying. What you're really saying is if this girl had popped the hood and brought a hammer down on the water pump and destroyed it, you're saying she destroyed a five-year-old water pump that might be worth $25, and the University of North Texas is saying, well, we need to go get a new water pump for our car, and a new water pump costs $250. So is the question she destroyed a 25-year-old five-year water pump, or she basically destroyed what needs to be a $250 new water pump because that's what it costs to replace?
Yeah, and if you had
I got it.
Okay, if I
can. Time's up, counsel. I got it.
I'm sorry. Selling the vehicle certainly would be, it's the difference in the value of the vehicle, right?
Got it.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Gladden. Ms. Tomlin, we appreciate your arguments. We appreciate you all being here. We appreciate your briefing in this matter as well. Your case has now been submitted, and you all are excused, and we will now adjourn court. Thank you.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals of the Texas District of Texas now stands adjourned.